Well, this is Night's Party Roundtable Discussion. This is Thomas Robb.
Thanks, Rob.
And Rachel Pendergraft.
Yeah, we're here. This is June 26th. And
months is going by fast.
Years go by fast.
Seems like we just had our Faith and Freedom Conference, and now we're already getting ready to making plans for National Fan Congress.
September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Yeah. So 2 months. So
yeah, it's going to come quick. So, but it's right on, now it's hot. We're a bit of summer here, and we're dying for some fresh rain. But it's
is
nice.
There,
and
is there anything? You said fresh rain. Is there anything not but fresh rain?
Well, acid rain.
Acid rain. I guess that would not
I
be
don't
good.
Know. That's what I always heard in school. Acid about rain. The acid rain.
Well, yeah. Yes, you wouldn't have.
Wouldn't have that. Here.
Sour rain, or you wouldn't have stale rain.
Right.
Or out of date rain. Oh, this rain is from 2 months ago. Can we get some fresh rain?
Fresh rain. But yeah, but I mean, besides being hot, it's just it's been I mean, like we said, Congress is coming up literally in 2 months, and we have our summer edition newspaper of the Crusader that is going out. And so,
The mail this week.
Yeah, and we're really encouraging everyone to, you know, get their, they can get 100 copies for $45. That includes the postage, and get those put out in your area. You can leave them around. You can pick names out of a phone book, or if you don't use a phone book or whatever, get your numbers online and local media and schools and mayor's office and things like that, and just get them sent out and, you know, keep them through the month and send a few out every week.
Yeah.
And they'll go quick. They'll go quick.
Yeah. And, you know, 25, 30, 40, 50 copies, rolling them up, you know, it's just maybe an hour of their time. And it's doing something to advance this important message to our people, because the issue is still race.
Right.
And I know that with the phenomena going on in Europe and the rise of nationalism, and the rise in this country of the Donald Trump campaign and so on, I know a lot of people feel encouraged, as we are also, about it. But you still have to understand that the core of it all is whether we preserve our racial identity.
Right.
And not so much an economic independence from globalists or elitists or whatever, but whether we can, as a people, maintain and preserve our racial identity. Because that is where all civilization, that is where all culture comes from, your racial identity, who you are as a people.
Right.
The, I know that the people are excited about the Trump campaign, but, you know, the enemy is, and I'm put up maybe a caution statement, but the enemy historically is very adept at shifting its colors, so to speak, to what will fit in with the mold of the people. And I can see
they play the good chameleon.
Right. And so while we see the shift and we see this revolt against globalism, the elitists are smart enough to know that they can shift their colors and shift their attention and blend in with the revolt, so to speak, while still promoting white genocide.
Well, sure. I mean, that's how they capture the conservative movement, you know.
Right.
As you got those people, they got into the conservative movement, which was mainly built around social and cultural issues, and then they made it all about economic issues. And now you've got, you know, people that argue over what type of conservative they are. Well, I'm a fiscal conservative. Well, I'm a more social conservative. And then you get the GOP leadership, and they're trying to decide, well,
you got neocons.
Yeah, you know, you got your, like, they want to paint, like, there's this faction of the Republican Party that these, like, you know, racist rural country folk, and that's not what we're about. We're about, you know, financially conservative values and stuff, and all because they've been captured, because that's not what they used to be about.
Right.
It was about, you know, no, we don't want queers teaching in schools, and we don't want abortion, and we don't want this, and illegal aliens and everything. And now they've abandoned all those issues to worry about economic policy.
Yeah. And you see, even the conservative movement is embracing the LGBT community.
Right, well, yeah.
It's amazing. But if you are...
Well, Jenner guy, what's his name?
Bruce Jenner.
Bruce Jenner. You know, he went on the record saying he's a proud Republican. He still has conservative values. Well, that's okay. Caitlin's got conservative values still.
But, you know, people, we just want to caution people to watch that. The LGBT community is being accepted by conservatives.
Absolutely.
Not a few right-wing debt jobs, lewds, like we might be called. But for the most part, you watch the conservative movement on television and the media and so forth, and they are embracing the homosexual lifestyle. And one of the things they always want to point out, what they do is they always talk about how bad Al-Qaeda is and how bad ISIS is because they're anti-gay, you know? And therefore, we're being told that conservatives should not be against queers.
And if you're anti-gay, that means you're just the most horrible person.
Yeah, you're sympathetic to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
It's like, Al-Qaeda's against queers. You're against queers, thus you must be part of or supporter of Al-Qaeda or ISIS or some sort of extreme Islamic theology or something like that. When the fact is, well, you can find lots of different groups and people and just individuals out there who might be opposed to something that you're opposed to. Just like, you know, you've got people out there that, oh, let's not, you know, abuse our animals. You could say, oh, well, okay. I agree with that. Let's not abuse animals. But those same people are then out there promoting abortion and saying, oh, we have to have right to abortion and so forth. So just because you're against abuse of animals doesn't mean you're then for abortion.
Right, yeah.
You know, but yeah, it's just crazy. They're, you know, Fox News the other day, I think it was, what's the girl's name that come on right before Bill O'Reilly?
Oh, are you talking about Kelly Megan?
Yeah, Kelly.
Megan Kelly.
Megan Kelly, yeah. Anyway, she does a her own news TV show now that's like a primetime deal. Uh-huh. Just a regular one of the network channels. And she had done that. This was about a month ago in her premiere show, and she had Donald Trump on there. And he was there at the beginning watching Jason. And then at the end, in between... She interviewed transgender
performer. It's a performer.
Yeah, I didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, it was
athletics, actress. I don't know.
It's an actor, actress, whatever. It's a man, you know. And
but it was just all like, oh, here we are.
A couple of girls giggling together.
Yeah, yeah,
no big deal. Like, oh, this is sick.
It's like, stay away from me.
Right.
you know.
I remember one scene that this transgendered. A perverted guy who, he's black, but it'll make a difference. There are whites that are just
But just for the description of...
Correct. Just for the description, because Bruce Jenner's white. So we're not just picking on the racial point here.
We're not just picking on the black transgenders.
No, that's right.
We despise them equally.
but it was this... It's an actress.
Okay.
Actor. I don't know how to call it, you know. Because this is a man.
It.
And she says, oh, nothing I like better than waking up next to a beautiful man.
Yeah.
And big guy says, I understand you there. You know, I'm with you there.
She probably didn't even think anything of it. That's just like...
Correct.
Within, you know, it's every from the churches on to the... down the aisles of the Republican Party, they are all like... Oh, let's just, we have to be real compassionate and just, it's beyond me to even depict their levels of stupidity when they come to call themselves conservatives or Christians or anything like that, and then just be able to act like that's just like an aside the point.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the spokesman for all this resurgence of anti-globalism going on in this country as well as Europe, because spokesmen are still embracing miscegenation and still embracing sodomy.
Yeah.
And acceptance of those things. They just opposed the globalists. And that's why we find this so-called revolt against the changing of their culture, because nobody wants to come out quite yet and say race. And so the other is what is being passed. But we all know the culture is just code word for race. And but again, the spokesman or the enemy is very adept at changing their colors and moving into a vacuum. And when they see what's happening here in this country and what's happening in Europe, you have this move, and we will continue to see it move as the enemy begins to absorb and take on the colors of nationalism. But unless they really embrace what needs to be done and will be done in time as awakening continues, unless they embrace traditional Christian values, mm-hmm. of family built around racial separation and proper gender identity, until they embrace those Christian values, there's no real hope for us.
No, absolutely. And, you know, when we say white, you know, nationalists and so forth, that really is a wide, wide net, because there's so much varying belief out there among people. I mean, there's people that are, oh, yeah, maybe I like white people, but they don't have any, like, Christian virtue about it. It's just they're white, so they like other white people or want to, you know, things like that.
Well, they adopt some religions that are anti-Christian.
Right.
Olden-ism or some of the, perhaps, what they view to be,
old
which is their interpretation of old Nordic religions. And, you know, though some of those old Nordic religions, people don't, like Judaism, nobody really knew what the Druids believed. They got some little glimpses of it. But modern-day Druids are in no way representative of ancient Druids at all.
No, not
for the predecessors to the Celtic Church and so forth. But anyway, but you were talking about basically chameleons and how the queer people and enemy are good at adapting. And you know, a mention about, you know, white nationalist names spreads a wide net, because they are trying to get themselves into the white nationalist cause,
right.
Homosexuals. And like I said, that's really spreads a wide net, because there's people out there who are claiming to be for the white cause that I would not consider.
They're anti-family.
They're anti-family. They are anti-white. And, you know, there's I don't remember their name, but there's a think tank, so-called think tank, that's actually getting a lot of press lately in cultural sections and so forth. I think alt-right, Countercurrents is affiliated with them. And they've had queers come and speak at their conferences.
Right.
And I wouldn't consider those people white nationalists,
yeah.
You know, because it's anti-white and anti-family and anti-white culture.
Yeah.
But the enemy is very, very adept at permeating themselves into everything. And that's why people have to be totally
National Policy Institute, that's what you're referring to.
Yeah. Have to be very, very on guard for these things.
Yeah.
Because our enemy, you know, the best way they see to actually destroy our people is to destroy the family and destroy the causes and institutions that support that. And
yeah.
If they can tear down our white institutions and even our white, you know, pro-white organization, they can tear them apart from the inside by interjecting degeneracy into it, then they've won.
Yeah. And the family is the core of it. The family, if they destroy the family, they win. And that's why the effort is to destroy the family through perversion and through the economics. We talked to a young girl the other day, you recall, Rachel?
Mm-hmm.
And she said she would like to have 6 children. But her husband only wants 2 because they said they could only afford 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how large would our families be if people could afford to have more children? But they can't, because they're paying all the money to feed welfare people and immigrants and foreign aid and taxes. So they're left struggling to support a family of 1 or 2 and don't have larger children, even though many would like to.
Well, the U.S. Census Bureau just released just a few days ago that that Asians are the largest immigration group in the United States.
And people don't think about that because all the focus is on illegal aliens.
Right.
And there's a smokescreen.
Right. Well, they started taking over as far as the largest immigration group over Mexicans in 2000. And wow. So you have Asians and you have Mexicans. And yes, and those are because of migration. But yeah, those are all illegal. I mean, right. The Chinese are not coming across here on boats and they're not coming up from Mexico. They're coming here on
planes and boats. Yeah, they have to go through the customs counter just like everybody else.
But what's interesting is they were showing that statistically how much they've increased over the last 10, 15 years, Asians and the Mexicans and the blacks and the whites basically are decreasing because their birth rate is about, I think it was like -0.5 or something like that. It's like minus half of a percent, you know, because they're saying that basically the average white family is about 2 kids, and that's not enough to sustain the population level. You have to have 3, 4, 5 kids to continually increase a population level.
Yeah, so it's just having 3 children just kind of maintain.
Yeah, so you're having 2 is not even maintaining it. It's just basically you're still decreasing it. Yeah. And so you know,
and white people in general, you know, they have a higher concept or higher standard of living
And responsibility.
And yeah, and you know, and so they look at a child, not this, oh, we're gonna have as many kids we can because we get an extra check for every child we get. You know, they don't, for the most part, and I'm not saying all white people don't think that way, that there are, but you know, for the most part, you know, I think white people, when they're having their families and planning their future and lives and they're getting married and stuff like that, you know, they think about, you know, what does it take to educate this child and send them to college and the medical bills and insurance.
All these responsibility.
All these things.
The same form of responsibility that causes them to have a law and orderly society.
Right, absolutely.
Recognize discipline.
And so, you know, they limit it to 3 children, you know. Now, I would say that, you know, while it's good to have that high standard of living, not every child needs to go to college either. And the fact is that the news comes out all the time. They'll be like, oh, the cost of raising a child has now been increased to $600,000 or something over the course of a lifetime. I don't know what it is, but some unghastly amount, you know. And then you get these young people and they're like, oh, my God, you know, $1 million a child, you know. Is that something that we can, you know, do? Is that something we can handle?
Well, the whole, even the educational system is really any anti-trade from the standpoint of having a trade,
right?
Air conditioning trade or
just what they call blue collar,
blue collar worker. Everything is, if you don't go to college and have like say a degree, then you're just a failure in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And instead of saying no, you can still succeed in life by having some type of trade, you know, blue collar trade that is still worthy, still provides a good income for your family. But the whole system is, oh, when you graduate from high school, you have to have college.
Right.
You
know,
because the idea is going to import these foreign workers in to do all the little minuscule jobs that you're not going to do.
Yeah, and so they create the culture in people's minds.
And if you aren't able to send your kid to college, then you're a failure as a parent.
Right.
And who wants to be a failure as a parent?
Yeah. So, but I'm saying they create the culture in people's minds. So from little up, kids are being taught, go to college, go to college, go to college, which is fine. I'm not against it. You went to college, Jason and Rachel. I went, but the point is, go to college, go to college, go to college, and look down upon manual labor.
Right.
And then we get some kid who's 18, 19 years old, and he sees a sign, help wanted. He got the attitude, because of programming, I'm not going to take that job. I'm a college graduate. I'm going to college.
Yeah, that's beneath me.
That's beneath me. And so then they say, oh, we can't find workers to fill our jobs. So we've got to bring in foreign workers from Taiwan or something.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, the government creates a problem, then the government steps forward and says, we have the answer now.
Yeah.
The same thing is happening with this medical industry. With Obamacare, because we saw the blueprint of what's happened in England, they have government-sponsored health care in England, and that sounds wonderful, especially if you need health care. But what has happened is a doctor in England, and it will be in this country too in time if Obamacare gets in full swing and single-payer payer and so forth. But in England, a doctor is no more than a civil servant. He gets a salary, same as postman, same as the guy who cleans, picks up your trash, or any other civil servant. He's a civil servant, works for the government, he gets a paycheck, and the kids who have really goal-orientated are choosing other professions. They're not going to become doctors, they're going to become accountants, or maybe not accountants, but business fields and so on. They're seeking law, attorneys, whatever. They're seeking other professions that does not limit by the government their income. And so what that has happened now in England is that they are running a shortage of doctors. So now they're bringing in doctors from Saudi Arabia and the Orient and from Philippines and nurses and so on. So now over half the doctors in England are not even English because they're bringing them foreign doctors in. And to a foreign doctor from Saudi Arabia, that salary he's going to get as a civil servant sounds like maybe a pretty good income to him, but some kid who has real attributes for success chooses other careers.
Right. Well, it's just the government manipulating every aspect of our lives, you know, from monetary systems to our social to
family planning. Yeah.
You know, I mean, more government involvement, more problems they actually
to who can go to the bathrooms.
Or exactly. Exactly. You know. But I'm kind of switching here, but you know, law of it, the EU, you know, we were talking about America and like that, but you're talking about England. But here recently, just a few days ago, England, through their voting process, voted to get out of the European Union.
Yeah.
And that is a big step.
That's a big step
to them because
and the other issue, countries are thinking the same thing,
right? Because the main issue over there was immigration,
right?
And that's why they wanted to get out of the EU. It wasn't because of really economic policies or anything like that. It was because of the mass immigration that was coming to England. I mean, their culture was basically is changing.
Mm-hmm.
London is majority non-white. I think Birmingham is the second city that's considered to be non-white in a few years. And so England is facing the same
struggles. You got a Muslim mayor.
Yeah, and they're facing the same struggles as the United States is facing. Mm-hmm. You know, because in England, they don't have people that can just cross the borders.
Right.
You know, there's an ocean there.
Yeah.
But they do bring them in by boatloads and trains.
Yeah, because being part of the EU, being part of the EU, the immigrant policy is set by the unelected officials in Brussels.
Yeah.
Right.
So they make the decision how many immigrants England can take or not take, or England, if England tries to stop the immigrants, they're a violation of the EU policy, they'd be fined.
Yeah, I looked over there at what's been happening in Germany and other parts of Central Europe and over in Eastern Europe with all those North Africans and all those people coming in and all the widespread violence and sexual assaults and everything. And they're like, yeah, we don't want that. We don't want that here. We've already got it in London and Birmingham and these big cities where they've migrated to and set up shop. But
yeah. Well, what I have here is, I pull this up. This is Nigel, is it Farage?
Farage.
He was one that spearheaded the movement of leaving Britain from the EU. And I really liked his speech because when people talk, you know, of course, we know what code words are. Mm-hmm. You know, don't get off the wrong exit. You know, don't go in the bad neighborhoods.
Right.
You know. we know what code words are. And so.
And most people do also.
And most people do too. Yeah. You know,
when they said, when you said, where's a bad neighborhood? They know what you're talking about.
But it's interesting to hear the code words in other countries, what they use and stuff like that. So I got his speech here, his victory speech that night. It's about 2 minutes long. So I'm going to press play. I got the volume up and hopefully, I got this on YouTube. So if by some chance someone is not able to hear it fully, just go on YouTube and, type in Nigel victory speech.
N-I-G-E-L.
N-I-G-E-L. And so anyway, I'm going to press play here.
Thank you very much. Okay. So I think we're joined by Nigel Farage. I hope we are. He's speaking.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Let's hear.
Dare to dream that the dawn is breaking on an independent, united kingdom. If the predictions now are right, this will be a victory for real people, a victory for ordinary people, a victory for decent people. We have fought against the multinationals, we fought against the big merchant banks, we fought against big politics, we fought against lies, corruption and deceit, and today honesty, decency and belief in nation, I think now is going to win. And we will have done it. We will have done it without having to fight, without a single bullet being fired. We'll have done it by damned hard work on the ground, by people like my friend Mr. Banks here. And by people in the Labour Party and the Conservative Party and UKIP and of no party who've taken part in this campaign. And we'll have done it not just for ourselves. We'll have done it for the whole of Europe. I hope this victory brings down this failed project and leads us to a Europe of sovereign nation states trading together, being friends together, cooperating together, and let's get rid of the flag, the anthem, Brussels, and all that has gone wrong. Let June the 23rd go down in our history as our Independence Day.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's been fighting a struggle over there for years. And people refer to him as an extremist. And nobody's listening to him. You know, he's talking to a hollow vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, all the same remarks they make about.
What's good is, you know, the different words, you know, it's just really amazing.
Yeah.
Ordinary people. Decent people.
Yeah.
You know, all these words that in England, they know what that means.
Right.
Ordinary people.
Yeah.
Decent
and then
people.
He says, common people. Be the salvation of all of Europe.
Exactly.
That means something.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was, and at the next day, I was reading some articles how, because of that, how much, how much improvement, how much positive has occurred from the standpoint of in France. I'm going to turn this off real quick.
Still to declare many of the major.
Got my computer going. But in France itself, how much of a push that has caused the people in France to get excited.
Yeah.
Because they say in a year, we have Marie Le Pen that is expected to run for the president in France. And because of that, they are really afraid that she actually might get elected.
Well, I mean, they have people in their national government now.
Right.
And they've been growing for years.
Well, absolutely.
But, you know, the enemy always has been able to throw a curve because they, what happens, they always come back to, it's going to hurt your economics. That was a big deal here in this, in England, that if you vote to exit the EU, it's going to hurt your economics, and you're going to be hurt economically. And the people said, well, maybe we are, but we'll do it on our own, and we'll fight through it and come out victorious in the end.
Right.
So,
but like in France, where they've had the bombings from, you know, ISIS and other extremist groups over there, that has caused the ordinary French people to say, we don't need this immigration coming in.
Yeah, you know? And they've got it worse than England does.
Exactly. Yeah, and so when, I know Marie Le Pen and their party, the National Front, have already people in the parliament and stuff like
but
that.
But they're expected to make a real big push
in about a year. Yeah. Because when you have someone saying they may actually be president, you can have people in Congress, in parliament, okay? Mm-hmm. But then be elected nationwide to a presidency level that is very firm on anti-immigration and nationalism, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. And it's happened all through Europe. I just saw a very short clip on it. Maybe you know more about it, Jason and Rachel, but Rome elected the first woman mayor of Rome. And it didn't say too much about her, but reading between the lines, you can tell that she's part of this resurgence against the EU.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of that.
Well, you know, and I know now, and I think Norway, and Finland, I'm not sure about Sweden, that they are deporting huge amounts of these so-called refugees. And so these countries are literally deporting thousands and thousands of these refugees back to their countries like they should be doing. Right. Because since they've been in there, rape has increased significantly, murder, especially your sexual crimes against the white women in those countries.
Yeah, they go to a mall, you get 15 or 20 of them surrounding some young girl, and then they like block everybody else out.
Right, yeah. Right.
Then that girl just becomes a victim.
Yeah.
And then they're called racist. And then they think those girls deserve it because they dress provocatively, they think. And therefore,
I think their eyes were showing or something.
Yeah. And that's why some of those countries, even a woman who's raped, she gets executed.
Yeah.
Because she would not have been raped if she did not dress in a certain manner.
And you're not talking about Europe now, you're talking
about... in your country where they have Sharia law.
Yeah.
But that's what they want in our countries.
Yeah.
That's what they're working for.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and in parts of London now, they already have neighborhoods or wards or whatever they call them, their little precincts over there, that operate under Sharia law because it's a Muslim majority in those areas. And England or, you know, some of the liberals there have allowed Sharia law and courts to exist to handle the legal issues of the Muslims there. So they totally are able to bypass English law and live under their own law, which is totally foreign to our culture. And that just blossoms and grows and slowly will, you know, take over the rest of, which is why, you know, you both have been saying that people are leaving the EU, wanted to leave it in England because of things like that, because they see what's happening.
Right. And with England leaving now, then France, now I would suspect France is going to be the next country that's going to be really pushing it, and possibly Germany, you know. I think Germany's probably going to have a little bit harder because they're pretty entrenched. As far as their policies, you know, with the EU.
Yeah,
and I would
highly doubt Merkel gets reelected there.
Right.
Well, she shouldn't be.
No.
And, but, I mean, that I mean, basically it's a worldwide attack on white people.
And right. And if we are hearing about this stuff in the news, then you know it's stronger than even what we're hearing.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Stronger than what we're hearing. Like all those Scandinavian countries are being beaten down by immigrants. And now some of your Eastern European countries are putting a restriction on new immigrants coming in. So good for them.
Yeah. But what I think is funny is that you have countries like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Those are two of the countries I think of right now that they don't allow any of these so-called refugees in their countries.
Yeah.
Oh. they don't allow them.
And they're Muslim countries.
They're Muslim countries. But no, they don't want them in there. But go to the white countries.
Yeah.
But we don't want them. You're not allowed here. You know? And I think it's pretty funny that, you know, they're the Muslim brothers, you know, and sisters over there, but don't come in our country. Go to a white country.
Yeah.
Because they know that in reality, it's a way to displace the population, you know, a demographic change. That's the ultimate issue. It's not there to help feed starving kids or help find homes or jobs for these people that's coming in. It's to displace the population and to change it. And that's the only purpose.
Yeah.
That's why when you see these so-called refugees coming in, the vast majority of them, 80% of them, are all men.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a standing army just coming in without the bullets.
Yeah. And I want, you know, I maybe have to be careful how I say this, because I don't want to come out wrong. But the thing is that this is just the first reaction of white people. This is the first reaction. Richard Kipling's poem, When the Saxons Begin to Hate. You know, if this is not solved by this peaceful manner that is coming out of white people now, because even though they're voting this way and so forth, it's being done in a peaceful manner. But at some point, if it's not done peacefully, there will be a berserker rage.
Oh, absolutely.
Because white people want to...
Yeah, they want to defend themselves.
They're going to defend
themselves. David Manning says that white people ain't going to take it no more.
They
look up David Manning in your YouTube. You don't know who he is.
Yeah,
well, he's a black preacher.
Well, when you have vast majority of these people coming in, obviously you're non-whites, coming in, and they are changing the culture. Everything is changing.
Everything.
And then statistically crime goes up, sexual assaults go up, rapes go up, everything goes up when they enter the country. And it gets to the point that there's a clash of a culture. You know? And it's
called culture wars. Right. You hear about it all the time. Culture.
And it will happen. I mean, yeah. It's inevitable. And it will happen. Twin Falls, Idaho. Just a few days ago, a 5-year-old white girl, okay, kid, was raped by 3 boys. 2 of them happened to be from Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, okay. And after they got done raping her, they started peeing in her mouth. I mean, this is in Idaho. Of all places. And so you got these 2 so-called...
A school bus or something? Or?
It was at some type of, like a daycare center or something like that. And so here you got...
After school.
So you got a white girl raped by these 2 non-whites. They're basically kids of refugees, you know?
Yeah.
And that's their culture. And, of course, they're surrounding all that all the time. Oh, go there, conquer, and rape. No doubt that's what they did.
Yeah.
And so that's just a example of when white people are going to say, we don't care anymore.
Yeah, we're not taking putting it. Up with that anymore.
No?
Yeah.
And it will.
And it's not.
It's coming. It's coming.
Yeah.
White man ain't going to take it no more.
David Manning. Okay. In case people are wondering who you're trying to mimic and who I try to mimic, is Reverend David Manning. Look him up on YouTube anyway. But. Well, yeah, a point will come when white people won't take it anymore. And we see this happening now. And
because white people always want to be peaceful. They always want to get along. They want to say, okay, well, let's do this. And we can change it. And we can change it. Maybe we move. Maybe we can do something different.
We're further out to the
suburbs. It gets to the point they can't move anymore.
Yeah.
It gets to the point that words will not have any effect anymore.
Yeah.
When you have basically the enemy coming at you and coming after your women with knives and guns, pitchforks, whatever you want to call it,
right?
Words doesn't won't count anymore.
You know, and that is something that I've been saying for 30, 40 years, is that up until recently, white people could always flee. There was always some place to flee to. You flee further out to the suburbs or whatever the case is. You're always a white flight. You know, you could always flee somewhere. But at some point, it's going to reach saturation and there'll be no place to flee any longer. And when there's no place to flee, then white people are left to only one thing, and that's the fight.
Absolutely.
And we're approaching that very quickly.
Well, and you can just see in just the small parts of Donald Trump's rallies. You know, where they're having rallies. Now there's like almost every rally there is, there's going to be a fight. You know, because you have the mass amount of non-whites coming there because Donald Trump...
Starting trouble.
Yeah, because Donald Trump basically represents white people that in their mind, he's like a white racist. Yeah. You know, and so they're coming in there. It's a race war. You know, Donald Trump may not see it. And he may see it. He might be smart enough. He's just not. He's playing the game. But in all reality, the non-whites see Donald Trump as just a white evil racist, you know. And they're coming there trying to disrupt rally. And then you have white people coming to Trump rally, knowing that's going to happen, and they're there trying to counter it.
Yeah,
you know.
And they're pumped up.
And they're pumped up. You know, and it's like a little mini race war. Well, at Trump's rallies. It's not happening at Clinton's rallies. No. You don't see white people going to Clinton's rallies and trying to disrupt it.
Right.
It's the white, or it's the non-whites going to Trump's rallies trying to disrupt it.
And it's happening almost every rally.
Yeah.
Well, this is why we've been saying that November 8th of this year, Election Day, everything changed in this country. You know, everything's going to change because one of two things will happen. Either Hillary Clinton will become elected president or Donald Trump will become president. That in itself doesn't bring about it, isn't what we're referring to. But if Hillary Clinton gets elected president, America sinks down into the dark ages almost instantly.
Mm-hmm.
A new Supreme Court justice definitely will be a 5-4 in any future decisions. Independent rights and freedoms and all the traditional values that we are accustomed to in this country will be out the window. It'll be gone forever. And if Donald Trump gets elected, there's going to be a reaction from the non-white crowd, the anti-white crowd, whether it be black or Mexican or Asian or Arab or whatever the case.
Self-hating whites.
Yeah, self-hating whites. But there's going to be a real reaction, probably a violent reaction, against Trump. And the line is going to be drawn permanently on November 8th. And
when you talk about, you know, Clinton becoming president, that doesn't mean all hope is lost. What I predict, I think what we've all been predicting all this time, is that's when you're going to see an increase in this balkanization.
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Because what's going to happen is people have already given up on the federal government.
Right.
Basically, they've given up on federal government. And so if Clinton becomes president, she's going to be pushing throttle more on everything from immigration to your economic policies, everything. And you're going to see a massive amount of white people basically moving to the heartland of America.
Yeah, and you've seen the states in the heartland right now begin to resist the federal government.
Right.
Resisting the government on this transgender decision bathroom. Resisting the government on gun confiscation and other issues. So... there is going to be a resurgence in the heartland of America. Time magazine in 2010 talked about that. We got a copy of it here in our library, but called The White Identity Crisis. And it was in March of 2010, I believe. And they talked about this growing resurgence of a white identity in the heartland. Unless they can do something to stop it. But at this point, they didn't know what they could do. So... things are happening. Things are changing. What we don't want people is somehow get... we want people to support the ideals that maybe Trump is supporting and the nationalism coming out of Europe. But don't hang your hat on it that if Trump gets elected, the battle's over.
Yeah, we're saved.
Yeah, the battle is not over.
Because we're still the chameleon.
Yeah. The battle's not over. And if Trump gets defeated... that'll be the end of the Republican Party.
Right.
You'll never again see a candidate like Trump or even close to a white Christian values becoming nominated for president again.
Right.
It'll be over with on a national level. Now, you do have the states which will continue embracing our values, and this is where you come to the balkanization we've referred to occurring. But on a national level, the Republican Party will fully convert over to just another version of the Democratic Party.
Absolutely.
And even, I think, what Geraldo said on TV the other day, something we already know, something that is talked about on TV, but I don't know how many people really understand it. But he said he don't think Trump will get elected. And he said because, he said, you cannot win an election without the minority vote.
Right.
You cannot win a presidential election without the minority vote. And he doesn't think that Trump is going to be able to persuade enough minority votes to support him. And that may very well be true, but the demographics are still somewhat in our favor.
Right.
And so it is possible that he can get elected this time. But what happens in 4 years from now is another ball game again. Because mm-hmm. in 4 years from now, you're going to have many of these young non-whites will become a voting age. So they're going to be voting.
So it's going to be an entirely different ball game.
Yeah. You're going to have many white people that are dying off. And so the demographic is going to be shifting unless Trump is able to really bring about his policies. But if he's not able to bring about his policies in full swing, the demographics are not going to be good for this country in 4 years, in 2020. And so we revert back to a Hillary Clinton person possibly becoming president.
Yeah.
And then the dark ages will continue
yeah.
move forward. And the balkanization will continue to move forward. And
well, like we've always said, everything always surrounds race. Everything surrounds race. You know, even these politics, you know, they may be using the code words, but it all comes back down to race.
Right.
You know, and the, you know, the Clinton crowd and all the immigrants that's continuing to coming in the United States, if she is elected, that's going to even bold them even more.
Right.
Because we see the boldness from the non-white crowd now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and imagine if Hillary becomes elected, it'll just, like, be a rubber stamp
yeah.
upon their boldness.
Well, yeah, like, for one thing, one of the big things that she's in support of is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which
right.
Trump is opposed to. And most people in the country have never even heard of that.
Right.
They're just starting to talk about it here the last few months. But it's been like
already
signed and sealed and delivered, as they say, for years now. You know, at least a year and a half or so. And people just think about that partnership trade agreement as having something to do with economics. But when you start actually looking into it, it allows movement of people within that. Zone.
Like the EU.
Yeah, within that trade
takes
zone,
away our
it allows the workers to pass freely between borders because they're all part of the partnership, and so you can work here, or you can, you know, do business here, and blah blah blah.
You pack up your wife and 15 kids from Bangladesh and move to
Nebraska.
Arkansas.
Yeah, the ease of migration, just making it easier. And you know, and then the highway that nobody talks about anymore that they're
right.
is still under construction, going from Mexico all the way up through
Canada.
Up through Canada, yeah. You know, I mean that's still in operation, and
that's now under George Bush
and stuff. Yeah,
you know, so Republicans have been betraying us too, right along.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, there's some real dangerous things on the horizon, which is why people, you know, need to focus on their communities and focus on their families and, you know, be prepared as far as, you know, everybody needs, especially women and stuff, they need to know how to defend themselves with a weapon, you know, families should be able to do things like that and move to a rural area and as they kind of say, you know, kind of get back to nature, not from a hippie standpoint, but you know, you don't want to be
the basics.
Get back to basics. You don't want to be in these big metropolitan
and people
areas.
Think that, well, when it comes out, I can leave. You have to leave the city.
Have you ever been in a traffic jam?
Have you ever watched a zombie movie?
You're not gonna leave.
Zombies break out.
I'm sorry, but you're not going to get out of the highway. And I know what people are thinking. Well, no, you can't take a freeway, but I know alternative routes. Well, yeah. You and maybe 500,000 other people, you're not the only person thinking about that alternative route.
Right.
You're not the only person. Other people are thinking that same alternative route. And it may not be the millions, but it could be the thousands. And that alternative route could be blockaded to the traffic jams.
Well, you know, when recently we were in Chicago and we're leaving Chicago, I think it took us like 2 hours just get out of Chicago.
On a normal traffic.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, the economy collapse or there's something financial crisis and people are like leaving the city. It's not going to happen.
Oh.
It's not going to happen. It's just might as well just take your car, lock it up, you know, and just walk.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. But then where are you going to walk to? People think, oh, they're going to flee the cities.
Where are they going to go to?
Yeah. People are not going to flee the cities because they don't know where to go. They're going to stay in the city.
Wait for the government to help them.
They're going to stay in the city. And it's going to be chaotic.
Yeah. So people need to start thinking about these things and anticipate and start planning a move. Our forefathers did it throughout history. And you need to be a pioneer and figure out some way to get your family out of the congested cities into some rural area. You know, we're not saying Arkansas. It could be a rural area in Michigan. It could be a rural area in Minnesota. Pardon?
South Dakota,
right. You get into a rural, safe area. And living 5 miles out of the city in a white enclave is not a rural area.
It's not a rural area.
No.
Yeah.
We see that too.
The enemies know how to get into the gated communities.
Yeah. Yeah. We know people, they live about maybe 5 miles outside of a major city and they got a little white enclave. Oh, I'm in a white area.
You're a little bubble that's about to be burst.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're laughing, but it's really not funny. It's sad, you know, that people don't.
Well, people get used to their life and their neighborhood and family around and things like that, and it's hard. It's really, really hard to mentally wrap your brain around the idea of picking up where you've known and built a life and moving somewhere else, or they think, well, I won't have all the shopping malls or as many restaurants or chain stores or whatever it is. It's not the museums. And, well, you know, you're being, like you said, Dad, a pioneer, and you're looking for safety for your family and for a future. And plus, you want to get them in an area when they're young enough so that that's where they want to build their life, too. Or else you're just leaving them behind in the...
Yeah, chaos. I hear these people talk about when I retire... And I can understand you got emotional connections there, a retirement check and so forth. So it's very difficult. We're not saying it's easy. But the point is, you say, well, I'm going to wait to retire. Well, then your child, who's now 13, will be 18 and possibly married. And you're going to say bye-bye to your grandkids and leave your poor little daughter or son, who's now married to perhaps a nice young man or young girl. But nevertheless, they're going to be trapped in the city that you can't wait to get out of.
Yeah.
And
they got a job and a boyfriend or girlfriend, and
so you got to move them when they're young enough, like you say, Rachel, when they will begin to establish their own cultural ties in the new community they move to, and will pick their mates from perhaps that local community, and instead of somebody that is going to be trapped in a large city, and therefore entrapping them also.
Yeah,
I mean, Jason had somebody come into his office here a while back, and. You mentioned that to him, and the guy said, I never thought about that.
Yeah, that was like about a year ago, you know, about basically the same type of deal, you know. Well, you know, he was saying, well, I'm just glad I won't be around when all this happens. I'll be dead and gone. And I was saying, well, what about your kids and your grandkids? They're going to be left with it. And he goes, well, yeah, I guess I didn't really think about that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why can't you think about that?
Yeah.
There's nothing more important than your family. And you're just happy, you know, that you'll be dead and gone and you won't have to see this mess that you're basically creating because you're not getting involved, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
And that's what people think. They don't think about what's going to happen in the future. They just think about themselves,
right.
You know. And it's a very sad situation because it's...
Well, that's why we liked what that young girl said on TV who was being interviewed. And wanted to know how she felt about leaving the European Union, this English girl. And she said, well, I'm for it. I want to leave the European Union. And then the news commentator said, well, how do you think it's going to improve your life by leaving the EU? And she said, well, it might not improve my life, but it will improve the life of my children.
Right.
And she said, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
It may not improve my life that quickly now in the present, but in the years to come, my children's life will be protected.
Yeah, nothing but good can come by keeping all the refugees out of our neighborhoods.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, they talk back here. We don't have but a few minutes, but Trump talks about removing the illegals, and well, we're not going to go around box up 11 million people. You know, and I get that 11 million figure is they've been using that around for years.
Yeah,
I remember 30 years ago talking about 11 million illegal aliens. I mean, have we been in a standstill or something?
Yeah.
But
well, they don't say there's a lot of it. They'll deport themselves.
Absolutely.
If there's policies in place saying we're not hiring you, or the businesses are going to be fined or sanctioned, illegals will move immediately.
Yeah, not going to get more government aid. You're not going to get health care to hospitals.
Right.
You know, it's not going to happen. They'll deport themselves. You're not going to go
wrong. Schools are shut down to you.
Yeah. So it can happen. Whether he'll follow through with it, I don't know. Now, Bill O'Reilly says the courts will never allow you to do that. Well, I didn't know that the courts were the supreme rulers of the land.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that. I thought we had three branches of government. But I know Bill O'Reilly said that. The courts will never allow you to do that. And he said, I think I can, you know. Yeah. And, but I think he can. I don't, you know, of course they say that, illegals, aliens have, due process, what they're trying to say. And I can understand due process of an illegal alien comes into the country and commits a crime, then he's entitled to, I suspect, a due process before the court. But if he's not committing a crime, he's just illegal, then there's due process, it's just deportation.
Right.
Because if you're going to have to give due process to
the
deport
evidence
him,
of your crime is that you're standing here in our country. So
but the point is that it's really odd, because if they catch you at the border, they deport you.
Yeah.
But if you get 100 miles into the country, then you're allowed to stay.
Right.
You know? Well, you're going to be deported. Don't make a difference. You call it the border. You call it. There's one guy who comes on TV all the time on Fox News as a Fox News contributor. And he boldly proclaimed he's an illegal alien. Well, you know, he should be, when he walks off the studio, he should be picked up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, absolutely.
Nation, they could send the buses to all these protesters.
Yeah,
you know, out west. You know, they send the buses out there and start picking them up if they wanted
to. Send them up to the Clinton rallies.
You know, and so you can't deport 11. You don't have to start everywhere. You just start in one city, and then kind of expand it, and then get the state, and move to the next state. You know, you don't need to do the whole country all at once.
Right.
So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we've got it figured out, don't we?
Yeah, well, we got it figured out.
But, well, I would encourage everyone that's listening to try to make plans for the Knights Party Congress, Family Congress coming up in September.
And trying isn't that hard.
Trying. I always tell people, just go to your calendar.
Mark it down.
I think the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
Yeah.
That Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's all you got to do. And then register and show up. I mean, it's a pretty easy thing to do.
Right, and bring the kids.
You got to bring your kids. Bring your spouses. It's a family event. That's why it's called the Knights Party Family Congress.
Yeah, and the media tries to scare people away. When you don't come, or you don't bring your children because you're afraid, then that means you believe the media.
Right.
You believe the lies of the liberal media. Don't believe their lies.
Right.
And so... I know you go on the internet and see some screwballs claiming to be in the Klan and so forth. I know that.
A lot of times those are actors, those are people that, hey, let's have something, you know, going on, a little club. And a year later, they're not even around, you know. And so we're the Knights of the legitimate organization. And
get those, the Crusader newspapers that we just got back from the printer, 100 newspapers for $45. They can call us and order them, or go to the website kkk.com and go to the store where it says literature, and you'll find it. you'll find it there, and you can order them online, and we'll get them shipped right out to you. And you know, we'd like to see these thousands of them distributed all across the country. The members, for the most part, do a fantastic job getting those out. And I know sometimes, well, it looks like we've just gone over, but I've heard sometimes people say, it doesn't do any good to distribute literature. Everybody already knows there's a problem and so forth. Well, we're not necessarily, when we have people distributing literature and newspapers, it's not necessarily always to just get the word out, because the word is out pretty, people know there's a problem, but it's about building the Knights Party and about this organization so that we can let American people know that even though there are these issues, that there are, there's a common sense, Christian, white, compassionate, forward-thinking and progressive white rights organization and party that has good plans for the future and a sound strategy and methodology, and this is an organization they can get behind.
Right, and not only get behind it, but incorporate their family.
Right.
Because their children need to be understand and be embraced by this by the culture of our people.
Right.
And not get in their schools. For the most part, they're not getting in their churches.
No.
So they need that bolstering effect that an organization like Knights Party can do for your children, to let them know that there are other people. They can have hope, that there are people who care about them and care about their future. So it's very important to do that. And they can also, you mentioned the email address, they can also just write to Post Office Box 2222, Harrison, Arkansas. That's P.O. Box 2222, Harrison, Arkansas. And send a check for $45 to 400 copies of The Crusader. And
that includes the shipping too.
Sure,
we'll get them right out to you.
Distributing them is very easy to do, and help your children become involved. If you mail them out, help the kids can help address envelopes,
or your grandkids,
roll bands around, distribute them down neighborhoods. Be involved. And we're gonna cut this off really quick. Our European American Heritage Festival is coming up on October 22nd. That's not a confirmed date, but pretty certain. And until next time, this is Thomas Robb reminding you to send a contribution to the Knights Party. Help us promote this cause of white Christian revival to our people. Until next time, this is Thomas Robb reminding you to love your God and love your people. And also signing out is...
Well, that's the rest of us, Rachel and Jason.
The rest of us. All right.
Goodbye.
Until next time.